Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts Andrew, Mark, and Rob as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Rob Vanuff.
I'm Bill Harvat.
Hi, I'm Mike.
And I'm Mark Zielinski. Welcome, everyone, to Countercharge episode where we're going to dive into the Bug Eater GT. Yeah, I'm really excited to go over this. First, why don't we just catch up with Bill? Bill, what have you been up to since the last time we chatted?
Oh, man, so much. Did we chat before June or after June?
We did chat after Adepticon.
Okay.
So that's probably, yeah. And that was only maybe a few weeks after Adepticon. So that had to be...
That's April.
Middle of April. Yeah. Yeah, you haven't been on in a while. So you've got some catching up to do, Bill.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of gaming. I have really been playing a lot of Kings of War lately. Hanging out with my family, enjoying my two sons. You know, Harrison's getting a little older. He's 5 months now, and Jude just turned 2 years old. Just playing a ton of Kings of War, getting ready. I've got a lot of big plans to do a lot more gaming. I'm going up to Lady of the Lakes GT to play with Chris Kapsner and hang out with Caleb and hang out with Jerry and all the crew up there. So that'll be a lot of fun. I am actually... And this is kind of like something that's been on the down low, but I'll let you guys know about it. Kyle and Caleb, and then Jonathan, who's known as Holy Diver on YouTube, they want to start an American version of 4-foot snake. So we're going to try and do like a fun off-the-cuff Kings of War-related podcast eventually. But we'll see if that actually gets off the ground.
Hopefully you'll at least be more consistent than 4-foot snake.
Yeah, I don't know.
And we hope that we can actually understand what you say.
I know. Yeah. No, those guys are great, but you know how it is to give them a little crap. We were thinking about calling it like, 50-foot python or something, because we're Americans and we're bigger and better. I have no idea what we're going to call it. We're not going to call it that, but if we do come up with something eventually. I've also been working really hard on Dungeon Crate and then also Lords of Adventure and War Games LLC, which is our company. We're start doing our crates out of a fulfillment center in Portland, Oregon now. So we're going to have a lot of the crates done out of our... out of Portland instead of our Omaha, Nebraska headquarters now. So we can, take on larger quantities. We're also going to launch War Games Crate upcoming. That'll probably be August or September launch for that. And man, I'm getting a ton of vendors on board for that. So check out wargamecrate.com. That'll be great.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing what you guys come up with.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. The coolest thing is that has happened just recently, Kings of War related, was last weekend there was an event for the first time at a store here in Omaha just opened up this last year. It's called Sparta Games. And as if we didn't have enough game stores in Omaha, we've got like five of them already, but... which is great. I mean, it's great to have a wealth of different places to play tabletop war games. But this new place called Sparta Games, which is not too far from my house, they just opened up and they had what was called Bring Out Your Lead. And it was like the open market or the free market event. And you could bring all of your used stuff out to the shop and then everybody could sell it. And then it was like a silent auction. Well, I ended up bidding $40 on a Wood Elf army that was like every GW Wood Elf model you could imagine in this box. And then I ended up bidding $30 on an Ogre army, which was like a whole entire GW Ogre army with like everything I'd ever need. And since everybody was so worried about getting like all these like 40K and War Machine and other models, and nobody was really interested in the fantasy stuff other than us guys that were like, oh, we're Kings of War players, so we'd love it. So Russ was out there, and he got a ton of stuff. There were a few other guys that got, like, complete armies. Like, one guy got an entire Vampire Counts army that he's going to turn into undead. And I ended up getting two complete armies for $70. So it was pretty crazy. My wife saw
– That's fantastic.
I know. My wife saw me walk in the door with it, and she's like, I thought you went there to sell things. So that's always the way it goes, though. But I didn't.
Oh, no, that's not always the way it goes, Bill. Nobody walks home with two complete armies for $70.
No, that's a steal.
And they're probably fully assembled and painted. Is that what you're going to tell us next?
So. Well, they're fully assembled, but they're not painted yet. So that's actually the beauty of it. Is I'm really happy about that because I can, you know, they're assembled well too. So I can just throw paint on them and make them look good and you know, do what I do with it and hobby it myself. So that'll be fun, other than the assembly. But, you know.
Oh, that sounds like the perfect project for Countercharge Kings of War Army in a Weekend Spectacular coming in July 2016.
Exactly. And I'm going to do that. I actually already put together, you know, there were a few things I needed to put together because I do have Mantic Stormwind Cavalry, and there are a few items in my army that are going to be Mantic, but most of my elf army is GW now, and I assembled it and actually played a game with it on Monday night, last night, and then I played a game tonight at our local group on Tuesday nights at the game shop here. So I'm 2-0 with my elves right now, so somebody needs to put me in my place and make me feel like I'm not really as good as I think I am with elves, because I think I got the perfect list figured out now. For me, anyway. But I'm sure somebody will figure out how to beat it. I'm just really enjoying that. Especially with how good I am at rolling ones. Because if you roll ones with elves, you see there's this thing called elite. And... So now I don't fear that anymore, but, you know, I should, like, go pro in rolling ones, because that's what I'm really good at.
That's awesome.
Well, you don't get a great score in Yahtzee with that there, Bill, so, but, you know, what can I say?
I know. Well, I don't think I've ever played Yahtzee in my life, so.
Oh, that might be a good thing, so.
If you guys ever want to play Yahtzee, you could just teach me the wrong rules and I'll just believe you. It's fine.
Awesome. Well, hey, you're getting armies prepped. So what's your remaining tournament schedule look like? I'm assuming Bug Eater's in there, but what else you got on the docket for this year?
Tournament schedule is, we just got done with Bug Eater GT, which was awesome. And now I'm looking at the Lady of the Lakes GT up in Duluth, Minnesota. And that is going to be July 30th and 31st. And the great thing about that is my wife, her aunt lives in Minneapolis. So I'm going to drop her and the kids off there. And then I'm going to drive the remainder up to Duluth and go play, you know, nerdy plastic Barbie games all weekend. And then I'll come back down and I'm going to take a couple extra days off work and we're going to go to Mall of America and all that fun stuff. And it's going to be a great GT. I'm really looking forward to it. I know the Texas guys are going up there, and I've actually been trying to listen to a couple episodes of the Beer Phase, and those guys are pretty funny, so it'll be nice to meet those guys. And I'm looking forward to playing, hopefully getting games in. I know they're going to have a mega battle that Friday night, so I'm going to go early and go play in that. And I'm hoping Jerry Page gets to go, because he was telling me he might be able to go. And I want to challenge him in the first round, because at Adepticon, we were going to play in like the second or third round, but they messed up the lists or whatever. So I got moved from that table. We were like shaking hands, getting ready to start. And they're like, oh, wait, no, we need to reset the tables. And then we didn't get to play. So I was all bummed out.
Be careful what you wish for. He's a good player.
Yeah, I just wanted to play against him because, you know, I've seen him on his Ultimate Gamer or whatever his channel is. The Ultimate Kill Your Face 5000 of YouTube channels or whatever. I don't know. But he's a really cool dude, and I want to play a game against him. So hopefully that happens. I know Caleb will be up there, and we'll all just make fun of him after he loses to Nick Williams. Yeah. But I'm bringing Nick Williams a Nebraska Cornhuskers ball cap to wear in his game just because Caleb's a Buckeyes fan, and I always give him crap. I'm like, you know, this next football season, I'm like, Huskers are going to beat you finally. Maybe we'll see. But, you know, we've got our little rivalry there, Nebraska Cornhuskers versus Ohio Buckeyes. So I figured I'd throw him off his game if he's staring at a Nebraska Cornhuskers ball cap the entire time while he's playing his game against Nick. We'll see. Other than that, I was thinking, I know that there's a Chicago GT in November, right? So, or maybe it's October.
Yeah, that's the Dragon Con or
Dragon Fall Con.
Dragon Fall.
That might be doable. I'm going to have to see. That would be a lot of fun to try and get out there. But if it's like, you know, blizzards or something, that might not happen. But if it's not too bad, I might attempt it and try and get some of the Omaha guys to go out there with me. So, but and I know that we're gonna plan another GT in November or somewhere around Thanksgiving for in Omaha, but we just haven't figured out what we're gonna call it or what, you know, because we have names for all of our GTs that are like from year to year, like Bug Eater is every year and March Hare is every year. So, and then we have a spring tournament, but we don't really have a fall tournament name yet, so we'll just make something up, whatever. Just another excuse to have a good Kings of War tournament.
Well, I mean, it sounds like Kings of War is just blowing up there in Omaha. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I'm so jealous. So so well, what do you attribute the success to?
Oh man, I think it's just a good player base. There's nothing else to do in Omaha, Nebraska besides drink beer and root for the Cornhuskers and go cow tipping. No, that's not true. But
what are you telling me? The cow tipping is not premium out there? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'm just saying, you know, there's fun stuff to do here. It's a good place to live. I love it. But, you know, we got a good community out here. There's a lot of people who enjoy tabletop war games. And we have a really good fantasy rank and flank community out here. People really have embraced the game, and I think it gets people excited that we've got such a healthy group of people playing out here. So it, you know, draws in new people. There are people that, you know, actually Tim, who I played against last night in my basement, he just came over and we became friends. After he actually listened to Countercharge and heard, oh, there's guys playing this game in Omaha. And then he introduced me or introduced himself to me because of this podcast, which is funny. And he came out and played at Dragon's Lair on Thursday nights. And then we found out he just moved into town from California and he used to play fantasy and now he wants to play King's War. And now he came in, I believe, second place at one of the last tournaments, and I don't think he placed in Bug Eater. No, he didn't, but he's playing and having a lot of fun, and he's playing in the GTs and all of the events, and he's a good dude. And you know, it's more people get drawn in like that and want to be around the group because even though we're spread out in three locations across Omaha, we all know each other and get to play against each other quite a bit. And I mean, even with there were several people who were out of town from the three groups or couldn't make it or whatever to Bug Eater, but we still had 20 players and it was still a good turnout. I think that we did pretty well considering that Blood and the Sun was the next week, and I think there was something, wasn't there something in Texas going around the same time or something? Or I can't remember. But
well, we had the tournament in Columbus at Origins as well. So
yeah. So I mean, the players were spread out. So considering, I think that a 20-person showing was pretty great. And not to mention that there were other games like Infinity. We had War Machine and a huge 40K event. There were so many 40K players there this year. So the gym was absolutely filled to the brim. Omaha is we're loving Kings of War, so it's definitely a great place to play Kings of War. In fact, Dragon's Lair, you can go there anytime and get all the Kings of War stuff. They've got a full two shelves full of two long shelves along the wall there full of Kings of War armies and models. And I know the game shop is finally getting more of their Kings of War stuff in. They've got mega armies, two-player starter sets, and rule books. And then Sparta, which just opened up, I just spoke with the owners, and they're going to start carrying Kings of War items too, or Mantic. Not just Kings of War, but Mantic, you know.
It's always important to pay where you play.
Absolutely, and that's kind of what I tell them. I'm like, you know, we play here. Let me get in touch with Joe Neat, and let's get you these forms and get some stuff in here so we can actually just buy it from you rather than having to go online and have it shipped every time. So
there's something to be said with just going into a store and the spontaneous purchase.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, ooh, that's shiny and nice and pretty, and my wife will be like, another model? I'll be like, you know, if I paint them all, then you die, right? That's how it works. So once you finish painting all your models, you die. So you got to make sure that you have that buffer of models.
I'm going to have to use that one myself. So. Then again, my wife will probably ship all my models out of the house, right?
It's a curse. Once you start buying models, you can't paint them all or else you die.
So, Mike, what have you been up to these days?
Well, lately I've been playing around with a laser cutter. Making movement trays and bases and experimenting with making MDF terrain.
Well, we know from firsthand experience, you are super handy with a 3D printer. So I can imagine you're going to do some awesome stuff with laser cutter.
Yeah, I've been making castle towers. We're going to be going, me and a group of players are going to be going down to Slobberknocker, and one of the scenarios require us each to have a castle tower. And so I'm making a cheap pre-painted MDF castle tower for everybody.
And I think I saw something where you're like painting the MDF before you cut it. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm spray painting the MDF with stone colors and things like that. And then we cut and engrave right on top of it. So there's no painting needed.
Mark, what have you been up to lately?
Me? Well, I just got back from the Origins Game Fair. So, you know, we've got a special episode that I did with Mike Carter down there at the show. And, you know, at the show, you know, I did a paint and take, and, you know, we had the GT down there. It was just a 1J GT. And I got to tell you, Bill, I mean, there were only 14 players at Origins and 16 at Blood and the Sun. So you topped them both.
Oh, man.
With 20. Nice. So you did outstanding. Well,
actually, I don't want to say that's nice because we want more players all around. So, yeah, I think that's pretty good. Then we had a good showing, but it's great to hear that those two tournaments also had a decent amount of people at them and had a good time as well. It looked like I saw lots of pictures, so looks like people were having a blast.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I was tweeting like crazy when I was down there at the Origins show, so you can check that out on CounterCharge at CounterCharge 2015 or at ASLSKFan. Or you can just hunt down the hashtag Origins 2016, and you will see tons of stuff going on there. We had a great time at Origins. There were over 16,000 people there. The turnstile was up over 35% from last year, and that's because they shifted it back a week, so all the kids were out of school, and so the place was packed this year. It was so good to see. They really modified the way that the vendor hall and the main gaming hall worked. And, you know, I think that was fortunate because the place was under construction as well. They're expanding the Columbus Convention Center. And I think it worked to Origin's advantage very much this year because they were able to combine Hall's D&E into one big giant hall. And it really was awesome. So Ohio War Kings area was in the back over there. And, you know, we just had a good time. There were events running all the time back there. So, but tune into the Countercharge Origins show and you'll get more information on that. And I also recorded a Countercharge Extra Origins Extra, so to speak, that has a lot of extra content from other people I talked to and stuff like that that were non-Mantic related. So, but we had a great time and I'm back just editing down stuff and, you know, trying to get ready for the next show. So how about you, Rob? What have you been up to?
Well, I have finally decompressed after NashCon, and I've got the hobby mojo flowing, and so now I am working on my Ogre Mammoth. So I've posted some pictures on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot, so I'm feverishly working on that. I got a resin mammoth from a company called Heroes of the Dark Age out of the UK. It's a really, it was like very inexpensive, so, and it's an awesome model. So I've put some crew in there. Working on that, starting just basically, I need to finish the ogres. I need to add 500 more points to the ogres to bring them to 2,500 so that they're ready for the ATC at the end of July. So,
did you give up on the Schleich models or?
Yeah, so I had a mammoth that you mentioned from that company, and I got it for like ridiculously cheap. The problem is this one that I got now is actually so much cooler. So,
I saw pictures of that. It looked pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It comes with a howdah. I mean, it didn't really require really any conversion at all other than just adding a few ropes to, you know, for the ogres to hang on to. And so the ogres themselves took a little bit of effort to get them to hold the spears and whatnot. Big props to the chariot kit. You know, everybody said, oh, ogre chariots suck. That may very well be in the game, but the bits that are in there are a fantastic little bit of a kit. And, you know, other news, I found out there's a burgeoning Kings of War community in my hometown of Lansing, Michigan. So, yeah, so I'm excited about that. I was talking to, I'm going to slaughter his name, but Joshua Weir, or it could be Weir. And he's from Lansing, and he plays at AFK Games, and they've got a tournament set up for September 17th. So it's just a few months away. So I'm figuring out how I'm going to work that out so that I can go home, visit my mom, and
go play some games.
Play Kings of War too. I mean, that's always all win in my book.
Yeah, go play some plastic Barbies.
Exactly. It's always fun to play in a new location though that you haven't played with new people. It's kind of refreshing because you go there and it's just like a new challenge. Well, Mark, is it time for a commercial break?
You know what? It is time for a commercial break.
Howdy, this is Mark Cox.
And this is Jeff Swan.
And this is Ryan Smith, and we are the Beer Phase Podcast.
We're three TOs from Texas, and we talk about the most important phase in Kings of War, as well as other games we play, the Beer Phase.
Hang out with us and get our thoughts on hobby, the best beer available, any gaming tactics and current events in the gaming community, as well as guest interviews from people from all over the world that have the same hobbies we do.
So grab a beer and have a laugh with us as we BS about all things wargaming. Check us out on Twitter, at TheBeerPhase, and TheBeerPhase.podbean.com, or on iTunes, TheBeerPhase, one word.
So Mike, this is the first time on Countercharge, so we've got to get some information from you. Why don't you start us off with a little bit of background on yourself, who you are, and where you're from?
Well, my name is Mike Gradowski. On the forums, you know me as Mike Wazowski, the Green Eyeball, and I'm from Wichita, Kansas. I've been here for 15 years. Prior to that, I was from Oklahoma, and prior to that, I was originally from Ohio. Kinsman, Cleveland, Austintown, Youngstown area.
What's your gaming origin story? Kind of give us a feel for what game got you into tabletop wargaming.
Well, when I was in about the eighth grade, my father took me and my brothers into a hobby store, and I saw some Warhammer miniatures, and I just had to buy some. And my father was like, you know, are you sure they're not painted? So we got him and got some cheap paints, you know, from Walmart, started painting them up. And a little bit after that, I found a store in the town we were living in, Ponca City, Oklahoma. It was Hall of Heroes. Went up there, and they play Warhammer there. And so my first army consisted of Battlemaster miniatures. I bought two sets of Battlemasters from a garage sale and started playing Empire with the Battlemaster minis.
Oh, I used to love the Battlemaster minis. They're so cool. They have a lot of character.
They were horrible to paint, though.
I bet.
And that was, I don't know, 20 plus, almost 30 years ago. And I've been playing one form or another of fantasy battles since, you know, junior high. The only thing that's been in my life longer than my wife.
Pretty unique time then for you, because with, you know, with the Sundering kind of transitioning away from Warhammer into Kings of War, it must be a scary time for you.
Actually, it's been a great time. I've really enjoyed it. The Sundering, what it's done for me is really opened my eyes to that there are some really great systems out there other than just, you know, GW. And I've enjoyed every minute of Kings of War. I've loved it. It's a great game system. The more I play it, the more I realize how miserable I was playing Warhammer Fantasy.
I know you're playing lots of Kings of War. What other games are you playing right now?
Well, I play some Team Yankee. I print off my own tanks with a 3D printer, and we play Team Yankee a lot. I play some Star Wars Armada, some X-Wing, you know, the basics of what most gamers play.
What's your local gaming scene in Wichita look like?
The local gaming scene in Wichita is, you can almost get a game in almost anything. We have two game stores here. One's Wizards Asylum and one's Hero Complex. I personally go to Hero Complex. It's a fantastic store. I've not seen one better than it in the entire country. It's a huge store. He has 16 tables. They're beautiful. They're fantastic tables. And you can go in there any day and get a game in almost anything from Frostgrave to, you know, Kings of War.
You know, the lifeblood of our community is the players. But it's almost like without that local store supporting the community, it's really hard to keep that rolling. So it's nice to have, it's refreshing to have a store that's really supporting your hobby.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And I make sure that I, you know, anytime I go into that store, I always buy something, be it paintbrush, models. I make sure that, you know, I pay the rent when I go in there to play. I'm, you know, not just going and playing and buying my stuff on eBay or anything. I support him quite a bit.
Pay where your play is a big thing.
Yes. Not, you know, not everything, but as much as I can, I'll buy from him.
Your gaming community plays a lot of different games, but just in general, how did they handle the destruction of the Warhammer world?
Not well. It was almost like a girl broke up with us or something. A lot of people went into depression. A lot of players went into denial. There's still some guys out there that believe that GW will bring back Warhammer Fantasy. They don't believe that it's gone. For me, I kind of did the Band-Aid thing. I ripped it off, got rid of it, and moved over to Kings of War almost immediately.
In the long term, you just get over it and move on.
Oh, yeah. It's healthier in the long term. If you try to stay with what you had, I see so many guys, because the player base just keeps dwindling. You have fewer people to play with. At least with Kings of War, it's a growing community. What we found is that a lot of players that used to play 7th edition and 6th edition, they didn't like Warhammer Fantasy the way it became, but they have really liked Kings of War. And we went from a couple people playing Kings of War to we got a regular gaming group of around 10 guys that we constantly meet up and play with.
So it sounds like Kings of War has really been a hit in Wichita.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely got a following here now.
Excellent. Would you consider yourself more of a competitive gamer or a hobby gamer?
I'm a hobby gamer. I love the hobby. You follow me on Twitter, I'm pretty sure, and I am constantly painting stuff. I paint about an army once every week to 2 weeks. So I'm constantly going through new armies. Examples, I'm about to start painting a salamander / lizardman army. And this will be probably the fifth one I've painted in 4 years.
Man, you're a machine.
Yeah, well, my job gives me a lot of free time. I work at home, so I have a lot of time to paint. And when I'm, you know, at work and I'm upgrading servers and waiting for code to compile, I'm painting models. And I paint about a unit to 2 units a day.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really quick. Most of the stuff I paint takes under, you know, 7 days for an entire army, usually around six days to get a whole army done.
Well, the benefit of that too, by having so many different armies, is that you can be, you kind of be always be playing with different armies. You can really become a master of a lot of different things. And more importantly, you know what all the different armies do. So when they are against you, you know exactly what to do.
Oh, absolutely. That's a interesting point is I finally played up at the Bug Eater GT I went to recently. I played Night Stalkers for the first time. And that was possibly the only army I've never played against in Kings of War. And it blew my mind how much I have relied on knowing what the other armies do, because I was totally mystified by the Night Stalkers. I wasn't sure what was coming at me or what was happening. And I pulled that game off as a win, but it was the scariest game I had up there just because of the unknown.
That's sometimes the most exciting games.
It was pretty exciting. He had a lot of fiends coming at me, a lot of fiends, and those things are mean.
So I met you at Lone Wolf GT this year. What other tournaments do you typically hit up?
Well, I used to go to Rock Wars, but that's kind of died. So I go to Lone Wolf, I go to Slobberknocker, and I go to Bug Eater. And I was going to go to the Sunflower GT up in Kansas City, but that was canceled.
Well, hopefully next year it gets resurrected. Yep. And we keep moving, because Rob's a cool guy, and I'm a big fan of the guys from Kansas City. What are your plans for 2017? Have you started thinking about that for the tournaments?
Yeah, I've already got the okay from the wife to go to Dallas, to Lone Wolf, and she definitely wants to go back to Omaha to finish the Omaha Zoo, so we'll be going to Bug Eater. And Slobberknocker, I have relatives that live down there in Oklahoma City, so I know I'll be going to Oklahoma City's tournament. And I don't know I can convince her, but I would like to come to NashCon.
Yes. any of our Southeast tournaments would be great for you to have you.
Well, the main problem is I have to drive because my wife will not fly. And if you haven't noticed, anywhere I go, I go with my wife. Mm-hmm. So I get, that's how I, you know, get to do these, is it's a little family vacation.
I'm just saying, you never know. You could see a tournament in Memphis at some point.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, NashCon looked like it was a blast. Your tables looked beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun with the 40 players. And like I was telling somebody just yesterday, I bet you a quarter of the players were relatively new players. And it was just a really neat mix of new players, veteran players, and kind of guys in the middle. And everybody got along, and we had a great time. And it was a smooth tournament. Knock on wood, we can be as successful next year.
Yeah, that's a trend I've noticed that most of the GTs I've attended this year is that it's about 50-50 mix of new players. We're talking, never been to a GT, anything like that, just picking up Kings of War and trying it out.
And I love it. I love that. The reality is that our community is developed or grows by the influx of new players.
Well, it's a testament to the Kings of War rules that new players can pick it up and be actually competitive in a GT environment, just learning the rules perhaps the night before.
We had certainly had a few at NashCon that's exactly what they did. We had a couple guys that played 8th edition. We literally walked them through a game and explained to him, okay, we jumped him on, you know, Kings of War, easyarmy.com, and said, look, here's how you build an army, helped him build an army, and then they played 5 games of Kings of War over the weekend and didn't do that bad.
It's mind-blowing how quick you can catch on this game. So there are some learning curves out there, like how to handle shooters, how to handle flyers. But those are all things that come with just games.
Yeah, and, you know, interesting question for you would be, what's your take on the Clash of Kings tournament pack that they've released?
Well, it's interesting. The Slobberknocker is actually going to use it, so I've been reading through it, getting ready for it. I like some of the things they did with the allies. The more I play the game, the more I don't know that the flyer rules needed, where if you're disrupted, you lose flying and nimble. I'm the more I play, the more flyers aren't as bad as what they were when you're first starting off. But the allies are probably a needed thing, because I personally run ogres with the dreaded keen eyes.
It's funny you say that, though. When I look at the rules or the tournament pack, I've had this conversation 100 times, I think, by now. It's not necessarily that we need the rules from a balance perspective. but it really just turns the dial back a little bit. It forces your hand to be a little bit more balanced in your army creation, and I think it makes the game more receptive, even more receptive to new players. Because it kind of, like to your point about flyers, a veteran player really isn't going to have a problem with flyers. If you know how to deal with them, you've got breath weapons, you've got, you know, you just move appropriately, they're not a problem. But for some reason, you know, new players into the game, they do have a problem with it. And, you know, so I guess I'm trying to say is some of those rules are really just, in my mind, they look like they're just designed to make the game even more inviting to new players and getting them up and running. And you know what? Maybe a year from now, we don't need the flyer rule anymore because everybody knows how to play against flyers.
I think the Pharaoh is a fair ruling too because, man, I'll tell you, every GT I go to, I'm playing at least one or two people that have the Pharaoh.
Well, let's be honest. There's three allies, right? There's the Pharaoh with the wings. There's the ogres with the shooter with the keen eye. And there's the rusty trombones. So, you know, it'll be certainly be nice to see some differences, you know, going forward.
Yes, and that's the thing that it's forced me is I've dropped the ogre shooters from my own list, and it's opened me up to look at, you know, other alternatives within the army. So I plan on running a Brotherhood down at Slobberknocker.
What model range are you using?
They are a mix of Fireforge and the GW Bretonian Knights.
The Fireforge stuff is fantastic.
Oh, the Fireforge men-at-arms are just, it's unbelievable. The value that you get for the money you spend, oh, it's, you get so much from Fireforge when you purchase one of their boxes. It's what, 30 guys in a box, and it's multi-plastic parts. They're just as good as anything GW makes.
You know, give us a sense of when did you get into Kings of War? Did you really, was it after the Sundering that you actually got into Kings of War, or did you dabble at all when First Edition was around?
Well, when First Edition was around, I think I did a demo game of it with our local Pathfinder. He was, you know, up at the store hanging out, and I was like, oh, hey, the, you know, pretty minis. He had them nicely painted, so I gave him an opportunity, and it just wasn't for me. And then the with the second edition, you know, I'd started looking at the rules, started reading through them. Some things had struck me interesting, and then the Sundering happened, and it was pretty much, you know, a given at that point. I'd already looked through the rule book, and I was like, you know, I'm going to give Kings of War a try and go whole hog in. And I knew I was fully in when I started ripping models off their bases to multi-base them.
Yeah, because there's no going back. I mean, it's certainly very difficult to go back.
Yes. And I'll tell you what, after years of playing, I just think to myself all the time, why did I never play a multi-base game before? It is amazing. I love multi-basing.
Yeah, it's weird too to me that, I mean, that's like a very historical gaming convention. I don't know why we've played these individually based games for so long. I know me speaking of me personally, because like you said, just that one simple change going from an individually based game to a unit based game probably saves 20% in terms of time.
Oh, the cleanup alone. Oh, it's the amount of time you save with cleanup and deployment, and it just blows my mind, you know. I remember playing Fantasy, having to pick up those piles of individual models and restack them and put them back in their trays, and, you know, none of that anymore. I will never be able to play an individual model-based game again. It's multi-base or nothing for me, unless it's a skirmish game.
So in terms of Kings of War 2nd Edition, you know, give me something in the rule set that you really think is very, very cool.
Well, what I really like is the multi-basing. It sold me on the game. That and the rule set right there, it just completely sold me in the game, is the multi-basing. I just adore it. I can't talk enough about it. I just love multi-basing, what it lets me do with the modeling aspect of the game, what it does for it's the best rule of the game is just being able to use multi-basing.
Awesome. Is there anything in the rule set you would like to see tweaked?
Yeah, there's a couple things. Chariots. I don't see people actually playing chariots, and they need something. And I put a little thought into it, and they could use either like a nimble rule or something like some type of impact rule that works like a thunderous charge, but gives you like D3 plus 2 blast or something like that on the charge. The chariots need something. They just, no one plays them, no one uses them, and I really like the looks of Chariots.
I've often wondered if it could be as simple as Chariots never lose Thunderous Charge or something like that. Because to your point, they need something. They need some advantage because nobody, flat out, nobody uses them.
Yeah.
And I think they're awesome looking on the table, and I want to see Chariots on the table.
Yeah, I absolutely... in fact, I'm so excited that they're doing an Empire Dust Army here soon because I want to do a Empire Dust Army with Chariots. I've always wanted to do that, but it's just they're not very useful in the game right now. And you know, it's either they're too big a footprint, not enough attacks. Well, maybe if they counted a regiment and redid the points to where the regiment's really a horde, so it has more attacks like a horde, because the footprint's so large of just a regiment of Chariots.
So, Empire of Dust, I'm sure you've seen the pictures.
Oh, yes.
So, what do you think of Brandon Palmer's paint job?
I love it. The blue is so striking. It just, oh man, I tell you what, I saw that paint job, and I was just like, I love it. It hits you. It smacks you in the face. It's just bright. It's vivid. It's a great contrast with the desert. It's hard not to look at it and just love it.
You know what I love about it is when we talk about Kings of War to people that are outside the Kings of War community, you know, inevitably someone's going to make a comment like, oh, their models stink. Or, okay. This just proves, you know, they have been getting better and better and better. And I think occasionally some of their models, the paint jobs kind of let the models down. This kind of, it's kind of culminated with this Empire Dust. The models are fantastic. The paint job is out of this world. It's just an awesome, awesome looking army.
That's actually the first thing I thought when I saw that army was, oh my God, Manic actually paid a professional painter to paint the army. And it looks so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that picture is, oh, they're spending some money on the painters now. That's a good thing.
When you jumped into Kings of War, was there any stumbling blocks for you coming from Warhammer?
There's obvious learning curves. The one thing is in Warhammer, you usually deploy in a long, narrow line on one board edge, and you just go out and slog it out in the middle. And it takes a few games to realize, oh, hey, this isn't the same game. It's more maneuver throughout the whole game, all the phases. You know, you don't really get the just big slog fest where you just keep going at it out in the center rolling dice. You got to be moving. So it took me a while to learn to deploy more in depth instead of just a long, narrow line. Some things like that. It took a long time to learn how to beat flyers. My first 20 games was against the double Dracone Dragon list. Lost 19 of those games until I finally figured out how to beat it, and haven't lost since to it. And, I would say, coming to it, I thought it was going to be more like Warhammer, but the more I play it, the more I realize it's nothing like Warhammer. They're not, besides the models being in fantasy and being in squares, that's about where the resemblance ends.
There's certainly, in my mind, many more differences than similarities between this and Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah, it's not Warhammer. You know, I used to hear it called Fantasy Light, things like that. It's not Fantasy Light. It's not even the same type of game. It's I tell you what, it punishes you though. If you're horrible at movement and things like that, this game can be rough.
Definitely put your big boy pants on in the movement phase.
Yes, because that's one of the first things I notice is in fantasy, you don't flank with trash because that just gives them more wounds and attacks back on you. In this game, if you get flanked by trash, it's going to hurt you. That trash is going to get double attacks, triple attacks. It's going to put some, it's going to wipe you out.
So you mentioned all these different armies. What armies do you have for Kings of War?
Well, everything I have is converted over to Kings of War. I have a Kingdoms of Men army that's about 2,500 points. I have a Rordian army that's about 3,000 points. And I have a Brotherhood army that's another, I don't know, good 3,000 points. And those aren't mixed. Those are each one I can field as a separate army. I have a Ratkin army of about 2,500. I have a Salamander army of about 3,000. I have I'm not sure how you're supposed to say it, but the Chaos Warrior one, the Vargen.
Varanger, as Jonathan on the 4 Foot Snake would say.
I have a Varanger list I've never played yet, but I plan on to soon. I have what's the army behind me? I have, oh, Abyssals, which I absolutely love and adore. I adore Abyssals. And, oh, I have an actual Mantic army, my first Mantic army. It's still in the boxes. It's an undead army.
You know, that's maybe a good question, too, is, you know, what is your favorite model range or army range from Mantic?
Ooh, you know, Empire Dust right now. I am so in love with that model range. I'm so excited about that. I've always wanted to do an Egyptian themed army, and I was literally devastated when they ended Tomb Kings. I didn't have the money to buy any Tomb Kings, and then I found out Empire of Dust was coming out. I've seen the models. I think they look better than the Tomb King models, especially the skeletons. The skeletons look excellent, and I'm really all in on the Tomb Kings right now, or the Empire of Dust.
Yeah, they're fantastic. You know, the one thing that did give me trepidation was they're the hybrid kits where it's the plastic and then you add the metal bits to convert them to this new look. But Brandon Palmer flat out pulled it off. So, you know, I mean, I'm not at his level, but certainly if what he's shown us that can be done with that kit, I'm all in.
It doesn't scare me as much because I've had armies where I've converted like 90% of every model in the army. So it just gives me something to do in between doing server upgrades and working on networks.
What about the scenarios? What's your favorite scenario out of the book?
Out of the book, I like Invade. I really like Invade.
And what's the thought process? What do you like about Invade?
What I like about Invade is it's almost a kill type scenario without the kill portion of it. It's more about winning by getting as much stuff on the other side as possible and keeping the stuff alive. So it's kind of a weird mix of, yes, you want to kill stuff, but you don't want your stuff to die either. And so it's a lot of cat and mouse, it seems like, in that scenario.
Well, let's take a quick commercial break and we'll come back on the other side and get into Bug Eater GT.
Hey, Jack.
Hey, Rob.
Have you heard of Dead Zone, the podcast, before?
Yes, I have. And where would you find that?
That would be at deadzonegame.podbean.com.
Dead Zone, the podcast. Come to deadzonegame.podbean.com to check us out. News, reviews, a lot of talking. Come check out the Dead Zone.
Welcome back to Counter Charge, and tonight our main goal is to get the Bug Eater experience. Why don't we start with, you kind of alluded a little bit earlier, talk about the venue, because it's a really unique venue, Bill.
Yeah, the venue is actually a local high school, Millard West High School in Omaha, Nebraska. And the whole tournament was put together by Tim Royers. And the event is a fundraiser for their debate team. So all of the entrance fees and everything, they support the debate team's travel expenses to their debate tournaments and everything. And this year, over $2,500 were raised for their tournaments and their debate, you know, events that happened during the school year. So it's a really great fundraiser for them. Plus, the kids really enjoy it because they come around with, like, they've got like wheel carts that they push around like candy bars and soda and Gatorades. And they like come to your table while you're playing your games. And they say, would you like a refreshment? You know, and then you give them like $2. And then they give you a bunch of candy and food and you keep playing and you don't have to leave to go get snacks. They just bring it right to you. So that's kind of,
that sounds fantastic.
So, yeah. And so they raise a bunch of food and they raise a bunch of money. They also have lunch every day. Like the first day they catered in Raising Cane's. Do you guys have that out there? It's like
not heard of it.
Okay, it's like chicken strips. They're like chicken strips and fries is what they're famous for. And then the next day there was pizza catered in. So you don't have to actually leave the event to go out and find food in Omaha. It's all there. And then, you know, you've got a school, so you've got a cafeteria to tables and chairs and everything to eat in. So that makes things really convenient. The tournament is basically, just two big gymnasiums at a school. and plenty of tables for every game you can imagine. Tim Royers, he started the tournament, I believe, 7 years ago now. This was the sixth year for the Bug Eater, so it's only the sixth time. Next year will be the seventh, but there are five separate tournaments going on at once, Kings of War, 40K, War Machine, Bolt Action, and Infinity. So lots of different games, so no matter what your flavor is, you can definitely have a lot of fun out there, and it's multiple days too. Even Friday night, there were people playing Battlefleet Gothic. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a great time. This was the first year we did a Kings of War tournament. We decided we were going to really try and promote Kings of War and make the move, especially because, there's nobody in Omaha. Literally no one at any of the stores plays Ninth Age. Nobody is still playing Eighth. We've pretty much converted the entire community out here. If you're in Nebraska at this point, you're playing Kings of War or you're not playing Fantasy. And there's like nobody playing Age of Sigmar either. I think everybody abandoned that. So I think we've pretty much cornered the market here. If you want to play Kings of War, Omaha, Nebraska is the place to be. So
sounds like a hotbed.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really great tournament. We had a lot of variety and diversity in the armies, and it was really great to see that. We didn't actually use the FAQ yet. That came out in the middle of when everybody was, signing up and making lists and everything. So since that came out so close to the tournament date, we decided, we made an educated decision there and just decided not to incorporate the new FAQ into the lists building and everything and the rules. So we did see a lot of allies that took magic items, like the ogre shooters were in a couple different lists with, the plus one to hit or whatever. And there were a couple of armies that took, flyers, flying pharaohs, and this and that. But the winning armies didn't have a lot of that in the list. So our tournament sweepstakes winner was Adam Ballard. He played undead. He had a lot of troll hordes and troops of soul reavers. And then he didn't have a flying dragon, but he did have a mounted vampire with Boots of the Seven Leagues, which gives him Vanguard. So he could sneak up on a shooty unit in turn one and just charge him right away, which was kind of a sneaky, cool thing to do. And he ended up winning the entire tournament. The runner-up was J.T. Graycheck, and he played Varanger with elf allies, and one thing that he did in his list that made me kind of laugh and chuckle to myself because it was sneaky and fun is he would take the little troop of wolves that they have. I can't remember. They're like tundra wolves, I think, right? And he put the pendant of retribution, the crystal pendant, on it. So he'd sneak up, people would assault him, and he'd blow everything up. So that was cool. Best sportsman, John Vlock. He plays dwarves. Tournament champion was Corey McCunis. He had elves. He had a lot of shooty elves. Runner-up was James Grimaldi with Night Stalkers. Lots of fiends, shadow hulks, and horrors with planar apparitions to heal. Player's choice, Mike Grudowski. He had a really beautiful Brotherhood army, and he also had Ogre Shooter allies, but he had a really well-painted and really cool-looking Brotherhood army.
Yeah, we're going to have Mike on after this interview. You'll hear from Mike.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I took some photos, and I actually put it in the highlight video that I made on YouTube. If you look up Lords of Adventure in War Games, you can see his army. You can see portions of all these armies. And what they look like. And then, he came out and played. And there were several different guys from the surrounding area that came out and played, and they were all really nice guys. And especially, there was, I can't remember his name right now, but he played, what was he playing? I think he was playing the Herd or whatever, but anyway, I don't know.
Dan McCarty?
But Dan McCarty, actually, he's local, but there was another guy playing the Herd, or maybe it was Forces of Nature. There was
a guy, Jason Wilborn?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, he had a really cool, he had a really cool list that I thought was interesting. And there were a couple other guys, though, that they were also like, everybody there was really positive, having a lot of fun. Even people were surprising people with new units. Like, there isn't anyone locally that has used Bloodworms yet. And there was one of the players that put a big horde of them, or legion of them, in their Night Stalkers. I think that's the army they came from, right? And he was just wrecking people with those things. And everybody's like, what are these? We don't see these. And that's the fun thing about having people from out of town with, you know, a different play style, and their norm is different than our norm, you know. So seeing people using units that people locally aren't throwing in their Night Stalker armies and winning games with it, that really gets me excited about the game, because, you know everywhere everybody's kind of, you know, what's normal for their play group is a lot different from everybody else, because there's so much variety and diversity that you can get into, even within the same lists, which is exciting. Seeing it being effective is what's so refreshing. Daniel McCarty got best painted with his Herd army. There's photos of that also in that video. And then we had a bunch of painting awards and prize support stuff. We gave away a ton of prizes from Mantic. Mantic was amazing in their prize support. It's above and beyond anything that other comparable companies have done for us in the past. But you know, it was really great to see. We even got an Orc Mega Army that was a great prize support, and that went out to one of the players. We got tons of different box sets and regiments and stuff. So everybody, and we had one of the Blaine trophies go out, and then the tournament support kit. So everybody walked away with something that day, which was great. So
talk to me a little about, what scenarios did you use?
We used all book scenarios. It was just a regular 1-6. And it was, Russ actually rolled for the scenario before every round. So we were going to mix it up, and maybe even use some Destiny of Kings, but we wanted to, for this first tournament at Bug Eater, we wanted to just kind of do a normal, you know, GT where everybody knew what they were getting into for this first, you know, GT. We used clocks too, which that actually was a reason why we didn't get above the 20, was we actually had probably 5 or 6 players come to us and say that they did not want to play in the tournament because of the clocks, which it was pretty funny because nobody went to time. We had plenty of time, and the clocks aren't scary. But some people got intimidated by that, unfortunately.
And what about the tables? I know Russ provided all the terrain.
Yeah, there was a lot of terrain that came from Russ and a lot of different sources. Russ has just accumulated over the years. He has a storage unit right outside of town, and it's full of stuff, and a lot of it is terrain. He has probably enough terrain to do, I would say, 40 or so tables worth of, you know, just fully ready to go war game, you know, terrain for tables. So So we do not have a problem with that. And all of it's painted up real nice, and he's acquired it over the years. He's either gotten it, modeled it himself, or he has acquired it from other people who have sold him terrain. So that's one thing we'll never have to worry about as long as Russ is helping run tournaments, because we've got a plethora of terrain.
What are some people you want to give shout outs to? Obviously you mentioned Tim Royers and Russ Barnes. Who else was there helping out?
Oh yeah, there we had really great Travis Tim. He was helping running the tournament as well. He is kind of one of our local he's like the war score captain. You know, he keeps track of the war score on the laptop. Like, he's just really good at it. And throughout all of our tournaments, for the first couple tournaments for Warhammer Refugees and then the March Hare, I kind of ran it. But since then, he's really good at War Score, so we just kind of let him do it. And he was a huge help. He helped kind of get the tables figured out, and then Russ would make the announcements and roll for everything. And I actually spent a lot of my time either I filmed the top table for every round, so there are actually 6 battle reports upcoming, including the championship game at Bug Eater. So as soon as I get those edited, they'll be on YouTube, and everybody can actually watch the games from Bug Eater. And that's something that I'm going to start doing every year, so it might be an incentive for players that want to go. And if you make the top table in your round, you'll get to actually be filmed and then have your game put on YouTube. And we did worry a little bit about people might be intimidated by that, but I made it happen in a way where I could just set it up to film, and I have 2 boom mics above the table capturing all the audio, and then I just kind of hit record and left. So that way people aren't like, oh, somebody's hovering over my shoulder during my game. There's just a couple of cameras there that you can hopefully tune out while you're playing. But yeah, that'll be really great. I'm hoping that people will enjoy that, and it'll bring some publicity to the tournament and get more players excited about coming next year so that they can be on the top table and get their game filmed.
And obviously the results are all on War Score. If you just look up Bug Eater Kings of War 2016,
yep,
it's there. And the website is gt.bugeatergames.com.
Correct.
And so you guys played 6 rounds. What time did you guys get finished on Sunday?
Oh, I think like 3 or 4 o'clock. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? That's just...
Yeah, and they didn't start, like, things didn't start up till 10 a.m. So it went pretty quick. Because we only did 2 games on Sunday, and Saturday was 4. So,
what time did you end on Saturday?
Saturday, I believe, was around 5 or 6, and somewhere in there.
God, it's amazing. How long did you have? How long was each round?
That started at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. I think. Yeah, 9 a.m. on Saturday, though. So.
See, that's the thing you got to love about Kings of War, Bill. It's just like, you know,
you
play that whole time, and then I would imagine there was all sorts of fun and frivolity after the game at 7 o'clock. I'm sure you had extra games, some dinners and drinking. And
mm-hmm. Not so much for me. I had to go back home and hang out with the wife and kids because, you know, I was already gone enough that weekend. So once I was done, I left. But there were actually guys from out of town, and they're like, where do you go for great beer and food? And luckily, like, not even 2 miles away from this place it's like not even a 5-minute drive. There's Laszlo's, which is Empyrean Brewing Company, and they have really awesome beer and really great food there. So the next day they were like, that was a perfect choice. Thank you so much. And I was like, yep, I know. It's great. I go there all the time. So if you go to Bug Eater GT next year, I'll have to. And that's something else is like one of my other hobbies is I for the longest time I did brewing. I actually don't do it now, but I used to just because it took up way too much time and You know, after you have kids, you have a lot less time and you have to choose your hobbies. So, yeah, brewing went. Also, you know, it kind of made me really fat when I was drinking all that beer.
Yeah, there's a tendency to do that.
So, but there's a ton of breweries, and I know all the brewers over at Nebraska Brewing Company. I was thinking about next year, it'd be fun to do like a brewery tour and a tournament. So that way everybody could come out and we could go to like Nebraska Brewing Company. We could go to Empyrean. We could go to, you know, there's Infusion. There's Lucky Bucket. There are like probably 6 or 7 breweries that we could hit in one day. So,
and that'd be awesome.
That would probably be appealing for some of the players, I believe. So,
absolutely. And you know what? I agree with you. Like, Aslak is here in town, and everybody comes in for a week. They come in from all around the world, and I'm in town. And people are like, that's great. You're so lucky. No, no, it's not, because I got to go to cross country meets and I got to go to work. And, you know, I'd rather go out of town, you know, and enjoy myself on that, you know. So I feel your pain, Bill. It's like, yeah, having a great time, hang out with the guys. No, the wife needs me at home.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I'm excited about Lady of the Lakes, because my wife will be 2.5 hours away and the kids will be, and I love them and they're amazing and I'll see them after the tournament, but you know, it's kind of time to let loose and enjoy myself and just worry about playing fun plastic Barbie games, you know.
Absolutely. That's like, I'm going to Dice Tower Con in a couple of weeks solo. I can't wait.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is the guys here in town, I think next year I'm going to have to figure out a way to get just a road trip with some of the guys, because they're like, well, if you're driving, can I go? And then I'm like, you know, because I've got 2 kids in the backseat and my wife. And, yeah, I'd love to be able to get another carload of guys to go up there with me. But
there you go, Rob. You have a job.
Yeah, somebody stop in Omaha and pick up the rest of my crew.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous. I had a chance to go to Lady of the Lake, but I just couldn't squeeze it in. But sounds like it's going to be quite the party.
Yeah. And I mean, it was either that, it was easier for me to get to do that because of the, you know, the aunt living in Minneapolis. I was going to go to with Gen Con, but I just can't make it work. The wife is just like, I'm not going to be happy if you go to Gen Con this year.
Well, and, you know, if I had a choice between Gen Con and Lady of the Lake, I'd go to Lady of the Lake.
Really?
Gen Con is just too dang big. It's just people crushing you everywhere. I'm not a big Gen Con fan, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been, so I really want to be able to go to Adepticon again next year, so I'm likely going to just, skip that one, especially because Lady of the Lakes is like the week before, I think. So, yeah.
Right. Got to save up the wife points.
Yeah, exactly. That and the PTO days, because those are, those are also something that I want to make sure I have enough of, just in case the kids get sick.
Absolutely.
So yeah, the job's kind of important. It might be something I want to make sure is a priority.
It's hard to remember that with all this gaming, but yes, going to work every day is very important.
I know. Dang it! Can I just play games all day? Oh man.
Well, Bill, we appreciate you coming on and talking to us about all things Bug Eater.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me. Thanks for letting me talk your ear off for a little while here.
Why don't we go ahead and take a commercial break, folks, and then we're going to come back on the other side, and we're going to go ahead and talk to Mike.
We have a special announcement that's sure to excite a few of the listeners out there, but I want to preface this by saying it's very important that you pay where you play. So if you have a local gaming store that is supporting your hobby by giving you a place to play on a weekly basis and stocking Mantic Games products, It's your duty to support that store. That being said, if you're like me, a person in an area that does not have a local gaming store that is stocking Kings of War, well, then we have an offer for you. Wartime Hobbies is a store catering to the Kings of War player that doesn't have a local gaming store supporting their local area. Todd and Cindy have generously provided a discount to the Countercharge listener. They're offering 25% off. Shipping is free over $50. They order new inventory on the third Saturday of the month. So head over to wartimehobbies.com and get on this great deal by using the coupon code COUNTERCHARGE. All one word. Welcome back to Countercharge. And next up, we're going to talk with Mike all about the Bug Eater GT. So this was your first Bug Eater, Mike?
Yes, this was my first year to go to Bug Eater.
Excellent. So why don't you start us off with, you know, what did you think of the venue?
The venue is fantastic. It's a beautiful school. It's in a great part of town. It's huge. You couldn't ask for a bigger space. I mean, it is just cavernous in the room. And as big as it is, they were able to keep it pretty cool.
Bill Harvat was mentioning that they actually have people with carts with candies and sodas, and they come to your table and serve you at your table.
Yes, it's a actual, it's a high school that they're holding it at, and this, it's a fundraiser for the high school for, I believe, the drama debate group or something like that. And they actually have some of the high school kids staffing the event, and they come by with the carts and ask you if you want snacks and treats. And then they, in another room, they actually have a snack bar where they also have things that you can buy for lunch, like pizza, chicken strips, things like that.
You had me at, they brought the stuff to your table.
Oh yeah. It's the only thing that was lacking that I've seen at any other GT is no alcohol because it is a school. But other than that, they bring it. They constantly are coming by making sure you look okay. If you look thirsty, you know, they ask you, and they don't interfere with the games, though. They know what's going on. They've, you know, been doing it long enough that they wait until you're at a point where they're not interrupting.
Talk to me about the tables. I know Russ Barnes did all the tables and terrain. So give me, you know, what was your assessment of the terrain?
The terrain was very good. At first, when I first looked at the tables, I thought maybe there wasn't quite enough terrain on them. But as I started playing them, I realized that the pieces that they did have was more than adequate for the setup. And it was very interesting. They didn't have any set rules on heights for heels or anything, so we were actually using the measurements of the heels. So some of the heels were ones, some of the heels were twos. So that was kind of interesting because a lot of the GTs I've been to, it's, you know, all heels are one, all heels are two. And in this particular one, they had variable heights for the heels, and I actually kind of enjoyed that. You know, it made it feel more, I don't know, a little bit more realistic because not all heels are the same height.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because traditionally a lot of tournaments were height two. They've come out with an FAQ that recommended them being height one. So we used that at NashCon, and it was okay, but realistically, number one, there are two problems with it. Number one, you know, we made a conscious effort of not having heels in the deployment zone. So heels were really not in a position to be abused, but because they were only height one, they didn't really do a very good job of blocking line of sight. And the second thing is, it really kind of cut down to your point about the variety of the terrain, right? Because if everything's one or everything's two, it kind of gets a little stale, you know?
Absolutely. And they had some really nice theme tables too. I know I played on one desert theme table with some Egyptian sphinxes and pyramids and stuff, and that was really nice. And there were some other themes that they had on different tables, and I really enjoyed the tables. I was pretty impressed with them.
So how many players did we have at the event? Do you recall?
I want to say 18, 16 to 18.
That's a good turnout for an event that's just turned to Kings of War.
I'll tell you what, every single game I played at Bug Eater was just absolutely enjoyable. The people across from me were having a good time. They looked like they enjoyed the game. Not once did I see someone get upset or mad. I know when I used to play fantasy at GTs, you know, that people be throwing dice and turning tables over and, you know, almost getting into fist fights. And I've not seen that at all with Kings of War.
Part of that, too, is that the rule set itself kind of gets out of the way. And I would like to think that the Kings of War rule set really draws in a different kind of player.
Well, it is what it is. You know, if you make a mistake, you made a mistake. It's not because, oh, you have some white dwarf that had a rule in it that that I was not aware of.
I guess to your point, when it's your own mistake, you really, who are you going to get frustrated with? It's your screw up.
Yep.
But if there's some arbitrary ruling about modified leadership, you know, you might have someone to, you know, that you resent.
Exactly. And like I said, a mistake is a mistake, and you made it. You suffer the penalties of it, which is usually a unit getting wiped out.
So you guys played 6 games, is that right?
That is correct, and we played at 2,500 points.
That's interesting, because I haven't done 2,500 points at 6 games that I can remember. I'm assuming Clash of Kings that I played 2 years ago was 2,500, but I don't remember playing 6 games. You know, compare that to Lone Wolf, where we played 6 games at 2,000 points. How did it compare pace-wise?
I didn't actually see it. I didn't feel a difference. I thought it would be slower, but it's just as fast. It's. I didn't feel any difference. What I did see a difference in it is the list building. At 2,500 points, you pretty much get to take whatever you want. At 2,000, you have to make some tough choices.
And what's your preference?
I kind of like the 2,000. Just because making those tough choices is, I feel, is part of the game.
You're listening to Counter Charge.
You know, you played 6 great games. Why don't you walk us through it? Give us just a snapshot of each game.
Okay. Well, the first one was against some elves. It was your typical shooty elf list with 2 big hordes of elves. And the opponent was fairly new to playing Kings of War. And, I did give him a hint about not deploying his war machines first, because that, you know, let me get out of his, shooting arcs pretty fairly easy. And it was a good game. It was a win. And game 2 was against, let's see here. It was against, I believe, a second elf list, which was almost identical to the first one. And I got a win out of that. Game 3 was against an undead player, and he beat me. He beat me on scenario, and I just lost that one. The third game was against, what was that third game? Or the fourth game was against, I don't remember what the fourth game was against. Game 5 on day 2, first game was against Night Stalkers, and, he deployed heavily on one side of the board, and I kind of matched it, and there was a impassable object in the middle of that area, and he came at me on one side of the object, and my army was just faster than his, so I quickly just turned and redeployed my entire army around his side and crushed him pretty hard from a bunch of charges, because I just outranged him on everything, and I was able to kind of isolate parts of his army off and kind of kill him piecemeal. And then the last game was against the Avarger, and I crushed him pretty good too.
Sounds like you had a fantastic weekend on the table.
Oh, it was pretty good. I had a pretty good time playing. It wasn't bad at all. The loss I had, the one thing that I would say is that they use these tarot cards for every game, in which case each player picked out a tarot card, and they were using the Mantic, the point spread.
Like the kill points, the kill points difference to adjust the score?
Yes, the kill point difference to adjust the score. And the tarot cards, they had just used straight out of Fantasy. And most of them gave you an extra 300 points if you achieved whatever's on there. And that's a pretty big swing on that chart. That's mm-hmm. pretty much going, up an entire level or down an entire level. And one of them was that if you played against a person with that, or whoever had a wizard alive at the end of the game got 300 points. Well, I had no wizards, and so everybody I played against, and they automatically got 300 points. And so I every game I played just about, I was 300 in the hole from the start.
So you did pretty good considering all that.
Yeah. It forced me to have some challenges, and I talked to him about the tarot cards, and they realized that was a horrible mistake, and they're getting rid of them for next year.
That's how you learn.
Yeah, that's how you learn, and it's the first time, so they thought they would translate better over into Kings of War than they actually did. But yeah, there were, you know, there's some subtle things with fantasy that, you know, everyone always took a wizard because
magic. You had to defense. just even if you had to use it defensively.
Yeah, and with Kings of War, I actually, there's mostly the human lists. I find that wizards are pretty close to useless. So, you know, it was my Brotherhood I took there. So I like Redeemers on horses too much. You know, defense 5, regen 5, 5 attacks, hitting on 3s, you know, individual. Mm-hmm. So I...
What's not to like?
Yeah, oh, God, they're wonderful. And they cost almost as much as a wizard with Bane Chant. So I always take 2 of those, one with Beast Slayer, one with Silver Rapier, and I kill dragons with those.
So you must have been pretty chuffed to actually win Player's Choice.
Yeah, I was really shocked and surprised by that because I knew no one up there, and that's one that you get voted on. And I, when they announced it, I was truly shocked by that, and I was really excited. It's fantastic. I don't know they realize this, but the guy who won Player's Choice last year at the fantasy tournament's also from Wichita.
Here's a question. Did you have anybody from Wichita go with you to the event?
Nope. I was the only one from Wichita that went to the event. It's all the Kings of War players. They didn't realize it was coming as soon as they did, so they weren't able to make it up there. But next year, I know we're going to go up there with a group of 5-6 guys. The next big GT in this area is Slobberknocker in Oklahoma City on the 23rd of July, and we're going down there. I know 7 deep. We have had 7 players paid for that one already, and we're all traveling and staying together down there.
They're turning to Kings of War for the first year as well, and I think they might be pleasantly surprised by the response that they get.
Yeah, I think that I keep watching who's playing and. Right now, the Kings of War, I think, is tied with 40K with the most players. So,
this is something else that we learned at NashCon. NashCon is a historical gaming convention, so you're typically going to do like Napoleonics and the Civil War, and obviously Bolt Action and Flames of War are very popular. But Kings of War has come on so strong that we had several players that were like, I'm not playing Bolt Action, I'm playing Kings of War. So it's really cool when you're pulling in new players from, not even from fantasy, but from... you know, historical gaming systems.
Yep. I actually saw that at Bug Eater. There were some War Machine Hordes players there, and the guys that were running the War Machine Hordes tournament, when they were done with that, they actually came over to the Kings of War tables and started playing Kings of War because the guys who were running the War Machine Hordes tournament were actually wanting to play Kings of War.
Isn't that great?
No, it's fantastic. I mean, it's wonderful. It's, you know, it's nice to be part of a system where people actually want to play it.
What are some of the armies you saw there? I mean, there must have been some cool armies.
Oh, there were some fantastic armies. There was a dwarf player who had one of those fully knitted hats with beards from Etsy.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He wore it while he was playing. It was cool to see that. There were a lot of Barangar lists, which is interesting because when I went down to Lone Wolf, I only saw a couple of Varangar lifts down there and a whole bunch of Abyssal Dwarfs and Rakan lifts. I go up to Slobberknocker and to Bug Eater, and there are 0 Rakan lifts and 0 Abyssal Dwarf lifts. So that's one of the things I find interesting is going to the different GTs. Being here in Wichita, I'm in the center of the country, so I get to travel to different regions, and there are definitely different metas out there.
Well, did you miss playing against Rakan?
Not at all.
Or Abyssal Dwarves?
Not at all.
Yeah. Breath Weapons, man. They'll do you in.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the Breath Weapons. It's the Breath Weapons Piercing 1 that will do you in.
You kind of give us your, you know, overall impressions of Bug Eater.
Fantastic. If you're able to travel to it, you should. It is a wonderful event. It's really well run. It was a lot larger than what I realized. I think they had 100 plus people there playing different games. I think it was like 150, I want to say. So it's a lot of players playing a lot of different systems. The tables are great. The terrain's great. The Outrider, or not the Outrider, what do they call them?
The Pathfinder.
The Pathfinder.
Yeah. So Bill Harvat and Russ Barnes.
Yes. Super nice guys. You couldn't find 2 friendlier people than those two. The venue is clean. It's well air conditioned. Not once did I get hot. There's food right on the site, and the city of Omaha surprisingly has a lot of stuff for your spouse to do.
Which so, in your case is important because she goes to all the events with you.
Yes, yes. I went to the event and she actually stopped doing stuff after I got out of the event. I was kind of waiting around 7 p.m. saying, where's the wife? You know, so.
Well, Mike, before we get you out of here, we got to talk a little bit about 3D printing because it's kind of your passion, right?
Oh, just nerd stuff in general is my passion. But yes, I do love 3D printing.
Yeah. And so, by the way, you sent me some stuff you printed. I guess it was at the Winterdale.
Yeah, it's part of the printable scenery stuff, the Winterdale. I sent you a war tower and the cottage.
And a couple walls. Big thanks, by the way. Those were a big hit at NashCon because we played with them on the table and people were like, what? 3D printed? I flip it over and like, look, see? Amazing stuff. So what's been going on in your world with 3D printing lately?
Well, I added a heated bed to my printer and in the process, I killed my printer. So that kind of stunk. I shorted a cable drilling through the case and then shorted out the motherboard. But with the job I do, no fair, I took it. You know, I took the motherboard out, took it into the office, used some microscopes and resoldered all the joints or all the connectors and stuff. And I have it back up and working. But heated bed is pretty big ad. I would say if you get a 3D printer, get a heated bed. You have to get a heated bed.
What does it give you?
What it does is when you're 3D printing, basically you're extruding plastic through a really hot element. And as the air cools, that you know, plastic hardens. Well, what happens is if you're cooling at different temperatures, you'll get warping. And what a heated bed does is it lets you keep it at a consistent temperature to prevent any warping of parts. I usually run my 3D bed at about, I don't know, 60 degrees Celsius. So, but yeah, it keeps it semi-soft, keeps it nice and flat. So that way, when you're printing off different parts, you're able to put them together really nicely. In fact, before I went up to Bug Eater, I 3D printed the observatory from the Winterdale stuff. And I took it up there to give away a raffle. I pre-painted it and everything for them.
And how did the recipient, what did they think when they got this cool prize?
I think he was pretty happy with it. I had it set up to where you could actually take the building apart and play on the inside of it. So I figured a lot of people play Frostgrave now and things like that. So besides just being a really cool piece of scenery, it's actually a playable piece that you can go inside. It has wooden floors and stuff. It was really nice. And he seemed really excited. It was huge. I mean, the thing is just massive.
Yeah, there's a guy on YouTube, and I don't remember his name, who's been printing that, and he's been showing it. It's a big, big piece of terrain.
Oh, it is. It is very large. And it took, I think, a good, I don't know, 8 days of printing to print off all the parts.
That's unbelievable. What else you got coming in 3D printing? Are you getting a new printer? Are you getting any new additions to the family there?
Well, probably not a new printer anytime soon, but I have a friend who's an engineer student from WSU, and I'm saving up. He has a printer that prints in color, and it uses 5 different spools all at once, so you can actually, and it will blend the colors together so you can actually print in color.
Are you saying you can make terrain without having to paint it?
Yeah. Yes, I am. It's a little money. It for him to build it, it costs about $3,000.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. When he was showing me, it blew my mind. I was like, wait, you have all, it works like an inkjet printer. It has all these different colors and it just blends them together. And I was just like, man, my mind is blown.
So for the listener, what printer do you actually own?
I own the cheapest possible printer I could find, which is a DaVinci Junior. Bought it at Christmas at Barnes & Noble for $250. They're going down the HP route where when you buy theirs, you have to buy their cartridges to mm-hmm. use them.
Yep.
But the technology they use for that is a NFC chip, and I was able to hack my NFC chip, and I have a password now for it. And I am able to use any cartridge. because I just rewrite the NFC chip whenever I get a new cartridge.
Right.
So I'm not stuck to theirs because I buy a 2-pound thing of filament for $9 and theirs is like $28.
Right. Well, that's where they make their money, right? Or what? Yes. That's their business model, basically.
Yes. So they're basically selling the printer at below cost and they're going to make it up on the cartridges. But if you're smart enough, you can get past that. But yeah, it cost me $250 at Christmas and it prints really nice. It has a self-leveling bed, which is very,
very important. We've had a guy, from Dicey Ventures on talking about 3D printing and he was a big fan of self-leveling beds.
Oh yeah. It'll save you hours of messing around with stuff. Self-leveling bed's huge. It did not have a heated bed, so I've added a heated bed. I found a company in China that sells heating elements with controllers. Ordered that. Other than that, that's what I've been doing. Lately, though, my current passion has been laser cutting. I've been using a laser cutter to make almost anything I can imagine. And I'll tell you what, you want to talk about cheap? You can buy a 4x8 sheet of MDF board for like $6 at Lowe's. And man, you can cut so much stuff out of just one sheet. It's just unbelievable.
What have you been making, like tokens and templates and that kind of stuff?
Movement trays. I've been making all my movement trays. I've been making all my bases with it. I've been making tokens. I've been making buildings, you know, pre-painted buildings. I spray paint the MDF board down and then use the laser cutter to engrave and cut all the, you know, designs onto it. And then I, you know, put it together and have a castle tower, you know, castle wall, things like that. So it's a pretty nice laser cutter. I think I priced it out. It was about $10,000. And it's not mine, but there's like a local inventors club that I belong to, and I have key access to the building, so I can go in there any time of the day. And, you know, along with the laser cutter, they have like 4 or 5 3D printers, and they have a blacksmith, a CNC, they have a wood, you know, woodworking shop, pretty much anything you could ever want they have.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's like $25 a month, and I get access to the place 24 hours a day, so... But when I saw that they had the laser cutter, I was like, I'm going to be spending some time here. Yeah. And basically, like, to get all the bases and, like, the movement trays and stuff for an entire army, it literally takes, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes to cut all that out. It's insane fast.
Mike, I just want to say thanks for coming on and talking to us about Kings of War, Wichita, 3D printers, laser printers, and everything you've been doing lately.
Oh, absolutely, Rob. I absolutely love the show. I listen to you guys every episode, and I appreciate you inviting me on. I had a lot of fun.
Well, that's going to do us tonight. Until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.
Hey guys, it's Aubrey here with Working, and when I tell you this, please do not like off the episode. Some little daughters out there might like it, because if you tell this to your daughters, they will absolutely love it, I bet. If they like Frozen a lot, yeah. Just, yeah.
Right.
So we're doing surprise slides, which if you never played Candyland before, we'll probably do that in another episode, but sort of like Candyland in like a Frozen version, and it's called surprise slides.
So the big difference here is it's got a draw card. Oh, Mom's ruined our show. Start over. No, don't do that. We'll be done in about 20 minutes.
We're doing a podcast. We're doing a podcast and you ruined it.
Okay. All right. Let's start again. Here, I'll tell you what. You bring us in, throw it to me, and I'll introduce the game.
Okay.
Okay? One. Remember, and also talk right in your mic. One. Remember, don't touch the table, because if you could touch it, but you just can't. If you bang it, I can hear every note. One, two.
Hey guys, it's Aubrey here with Working, and I'm sorry if you can hear it, but we have the fan on, and yeah, that's Jessica trying to ignore that. So, what we have today is do not link off the video, but I bet some daughters might like this video. If you tell this to your daughter, if they really like Frozen, they'll love it. It's surprise slides in...
it's a board game.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Candyland.
Yes, but Frozen. It's Frozen,
and it has another distinct difference, which is you can strategically change the board while it's being played. Right? You can flip the path. It's still a draw a card, or in this case, hit a spinner and move, right?
Yeah.
And move to the color spot. But this time, now you can control the way the board goes or...
Yes. And the main point of the playing game is it's a race to Elsa's Ice Palace.
Right, right.
And when you're on like the last square to get to Elsa's Ice Palace, it has this snowflake in the center with a bunch of colors around it. And whatever card you pull, it doesn't matter because it's a rainbow snowflake, so it doesn't matter.
Right. Surprise slides board game. Like I said, has a Frozen theme.
Yeah.
It's for ages 3+ and up, and it plays from 2 to 4 players. And it looks like a Candyland board. You instead of drawing cards, though, you have a spinner, and it gives you a color, red, blue, purple, whatever, and you move to the next available space. And then additionally, in addition to colors on the spinner, there's two special...
There's actually like...
Basically there's 4 sections in the board that can be removed and flipped over or rearranged to change the board on the fly. And so the trick is you want to arrange it in such a way that it helps you and at the same time hurts your opponent, right? You want the opponent to slide backwards.
Yes. Do you want... Let's get playing this game. Let's play this game.
Okay. Let's play it.
And we're sorry if you can hear a bunch of noises from us opening up the box.
All right. So first thing I'll notice is the pieces are pretty good.
Yeah, we have this lovely spinner here. And where Working is setting up. Oh, and by the way, you probably don't know this, but I actually made my own instructions when I was 5 years old to go with this game.
Right.
So.
And this game is for 3 and up. So little kids can play this game really easily.
Yeah.
All right. So we're here and you're going to be Elsa and I'm going to be Olaf.
Okay.
And you can go first. Do you want to spin it?
Okay. So you really...
So as we said, the spinner has green...
Hang on.
The spinner has green, blue, purple, yellow, red. It has a snowflake symbol, which is just like a wild card. And then it additionally has two spots where you can actually change out sections of the board.
Yeah. So basically how this game works is there's also something we didn't mention. That, like, if... what I got is I got a snowflake, and it has an arrow, and it's pointing out. So that means I have, and it's a frozen slid, so I have to go down there. But if it's pointing at you, then you don't go.
Right, you got to go in the direction of the arrows. Yes. So in one sense, it's almost like Chutes and Ladders a little bit, too, where you can slide
like
down the slides.
A frozen version of Chutes and Chutes and Ladders
mixed
and
with
Candyland.
Yeah. Kind of cool. Well, so you got a snowflake. And so you
and
went here?
Just like, no.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So
and now it's been me.
Just how it's usually done is, just like Candyland, you have to, like, say Working got yellow.
Talk in your
he
mic.
Couldn't go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He couldn't go like, there's one yellow in front of him. He couldn't jump to the second yellow. He had to go to the exact yellow.
Well, you've got to go to the next colored spot.
Yeah.
And if it's a snowflake, you'll have to follow the arrows to slide down the chutes. And it could be good, and it could be, like in your case, it was good. You moved ahead. So go ahead and spin for me.
When you're almost there, there's this little thing that Working, one time he got like five times in a row. It's where like you keep getting a snowflake.
Okay, I got a red. Move Olaf to red.
You keep getting a snowflake?
Elsa got green. Move Elsa to green.
It's sort of like
and
you
let's,
keep
and
th- getting
and
that
this is,
snowflake.
This is what happens, right? And so let's just pretend we speed the game up, okay? All right, and let's say it's your move now, Bree.
Yeah.
Oh, and so you got the flip card result, which means there's 4 cards, you are allowed to pick them up. They're double-sided, flip them over, and or move them in any direction.
Yes.
Well, why don't you do that?
I'm going to do this. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn them over, but when I turn them over, I'm also... And by the way, you might want to try and rememberize where your characters were, because this can make them slide off the board.
Correct. All right, I did it for you. All right, now it's my move.
Thanks.
Blue. Mm-hmm. I'm going to beat you, because I always win. I'm like a champion at this game.
Okay, my turn. Wait a second.
You didn't get it. You got it.
Say War King got one flip.
Right, so I
can It's sort of like this little panel, but it's not like the last time. It has one of those little things where it's like a bug thing where it's like egg, like stuff like that, and
one
it
of
has
the
arrows.
Yeah, one of the results lets you replace one card, flipping it over, and the other one lets you swap and flip over all four cards at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's how you play the game. And then the winner is the person that gets to Elsa's Frozen Palace. So, Aubrey, what do you like about this game?
That
I know I can answer this for you.
What?
Number one, it's Frozen, because Frozen's awesome.
You like Frozen?
I do, but I'm saying that's why it's awesome. Number two, it's really easy to play. You've been playing this game for a long time.
Yes.
You were like 5 or 4 when you got this game.
Yeah, and by the way, people, just because your character is Elsa doesn't mean you get to skip ahead. One time I brought this for game day in kindergarten, and one person wanted to be Elsa, and they thought they could skip ahead since they're Elsa. And
yeah.
So, race to Elsa.
So here's a question, though. What are some things that would make this game better? I know one. Instead of cardboard standees, it'd be nice to have plastic miniatures.
Yes, because with Elsa...
She's already peeling a little bit.
Yeah, she's peeling a little bit.
Because her cardboard's separating. Well, don't do that. What else about this game would you like to see improved? I'd like to have some magic added to the game. Where if I was Elsa, I could do some negative magic on you and maybe turn you into a snowman or freeze you to the ground or send you back 20 spaces. That would be pretty cool. Like conflict.
But if you're forgetting, this is sort of like a booby trap. War King got this like 5 times in a row once.
Right.
And it's like this little snowflake where like when you're almost to Elsa's Eye Palace and you keep getting a snowflake, but the snowflake has a little slide that keeps making you go back. And he got like 5 times in a row. And it was like...
You're crazy. Yeah. You were pretty rough on me.
Yeah.
So final thoughts on this game. What do you think?
It's fun. The only issue about the game is that I don't like how it's hard to that you have to try and rememberize where your characters were standing whenever you flip it.
Yeah.
I don't like how they fall off.
Okay. Well, that's a good game. It's real simple. If you got young daughters that love Frozen or young boys that like Frozen and you have a good family with young kids and older kids, it's a simple game to learn. It's quick. And there is just a little tiny bit of strategy. It is, a spin and move game for the most part, but there is some strategy in the rearrangement of the slides.
Yeah, even though it would be better if the actual characters were plastic, like in Candyland, how they have the plastic gingerbread man, but who cares?
Right.
But
all right.
Hot glue it.
You got anything else to say?
That I hope we get to do more games, as I always say. And
hey, we're now in a cave. Whoa.
Goodbye. Let's go back into the game cave. Just roll the dice and go over to our next game review. Bye.